I'm going to be talking about education research in international settings, but 1 hour is rather short, as is the case in most of these research method sessions. So this is very much a taster session to give you an idea of what are the things that you need to keep in mind if you're planning to do research in an international context. And a context is different from your own country context. Why do I do this session? I have been working in the field of international education research for over a decade and a half now. So I draw on various experiences of having worked in countries in South Asia, in Africa. I'm primarily a qualitative researcher, so I tend to work a lot with qualitative data collection tools. Okay, and my particular area of interest is looking at educational children with disabilities. So I work on issues of marginalization and equity. Okay, so you'll see a flavor of that coming through the kind of discussions and conversations. But given that we are a nice, intimate, small group, how about this? How about you guys tell me a little about what you're planning to do very quickly? What are you planning? I won't hold it to you, hold it against you if you don't do that for your R&I for the end of the next day or whatever. So go ahead. What is it? What are you proposing to do? Anyone? Get started. Yeah.
I'm interested in how knowledge is recontextualized in different places. So like how like a historical event, for instance, is represented in textbooks in this country, places in Europe, places in America, seeing how like the setting affects the recontextualizing.
Fascinating. Excellent. Do you have a particular event in mind?
I feel like historical events of the 20th century are probably some of the richest because there'll be lots of materials about it.
So yeah.
Something like the Holocaust or the Russian Revolution or something that's taught, that's sort of considered like a major global event, seeing how it's represented in different places, and if it's not represented in certain places, why?
Why? Okay, so you choose one or two different country contexts, hopefully not more than two.
Yeah, no.
I don't know, it's a very small piece of work.
Yeah.
You want to keep it contextualized. Okay, excellent. Who else? Any plans, any thoughts here?
Not really sure. I know I want to do something about theatre and education.
Which education is that?
Theatre and education.
Yeah.
Possibly, because I'm going to India this summer for 7 weeks, possibly to do with the rickshaw
project. Yeah, okay.
I'm not sure yet.
Where in India are you going?
Lots of places in Delhi, Footnote.
And a few others.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, this will be interesting because you might want to think about planning your project around that, and that's one of the reasons that we tend to do these series of sessions now, because if you are planning to go away, if you're planning to conduct some bit of your research around there, but planning is really important, thinking before you go, and I think for international research that's central. Anyone else wants to share their ideas in the back? Go ahead.
Very much similar to, I was thinking either something about theater and education or bilingualism and how that kind of influences approaches to education.
Okay.
Very vague.
Are you also traveling on the rickshaw project then?
No.
That's
no.
Why the coughing was happening after dinner.
No, I just lost the ability to drink for a little bit there.
That's okay. Go ahead.
So I'm hoping to do some kind of international work. I want to do a history one on the change in education pre and post independence in Zimbabwe. And transition there. Still split up in the air.
Fantastic. Okay, so a little bit of interest around in looking at international research. Yeah, okay. You're not too sure about that. Fair enough. It's
maybe.
Nice to listen. Maybe. Okay, so what I'm going to start by doing is just give you a flavor of the kind of research projects that have previously taken place in the field in terms of students doing various R&Is. So we're just going to talk through that. We're going to talk through, reflect very briefly on the kind of methods, and then I'll go on to talk a little bit about the key characteristics that are to keep in mind if you're planning international research, and end by giving you some key references. But very much stop me at any point, ask for elaborations, ask for clarifications. It's very much in that spirit that I'd like to run this session. Okay, so here are examples of different student projects that have taken place over the past few years, which I've been personally supervising or other people in the faculty have been supervising. So you'll see there's a whole array of different project titles from the you know, focusing on overseas volunteering in Nepal, gendered experiences on how gender is experienced in a school setting in Zambia, issues around performance and creativity in Singapore, language use in Mauritius, and indeed a desk-based study on looking at critically examining the MDGs. And what's really interesting in all this spread of different sessions and in different dissertations is that the methods students have used have been very varied. So to a large extent, your research question is the paramount aspect, and after that you decide on the method you want to use. And I'm sure that's the message you've been getting, hopefully, since yesterday and today. You decide, focus on the area of study, focus on your research project, and decide then on the method which is most appropriate to respond to that question. And this is what students have done in each of these cases. So for instance, many of these are the result of the fact that students were going to these contexts. Like you mentioned, you're going to on the rickshaw project. So this was one of my students who had actually got a placement in a school as an overseas volunteer working in Nepal in two rural settings during her break. So she was going and she wanted to interview her peer group of overseas volunteers to understand what they were, how they were experiencing volunteering. In Zambia, again, the student was going away for around 2 months for a placement working in an NGO, and hence that project happened. The last one, again, which I supervised, was a desk-based study. And this student was really interested in textual analysis, very keen in textual analysis. And she made up her mind that she didn't want to actually conduct primary research in the field, but use text as the data. So she looked at the Millennium Development Goals. Are you familiar with the MDGs? So she looked at the MDGs to try and see and analyze them to your theoretical lens using the post-colonial theories. Okay, so it was very much a discursive, analytical dissertation, which was very textual in nature. So it was a desk-based research. So the point I'm trying to make here, what you need to decide is on your research question, your research focus, and then each of these methods, a whole array of different methods, lend themselves to international research. So international research is not a method like you've been studying about surveys and observations, etc. So it's not a method, but it's the field of study. Okay? And what defines it is the focus of the research questions rather than the research methods. So you can have case studies. Have you done case studies yesterday? Did you do case study? No. Okay. Some might be familiar. Did you have questionnaire surveys? Yeah, you did that. Interviews? Hopefully you'll have them today. Or you had them yesterday? Excellent. Observations? Yesterday, yeah. So you see, you've covered some of the methods here, some research designs. So case study can be a research design or a method. But all of these lend themselves naturally to international research. So what I'm trying to say here, it's not a method. The underpinning, the questions, the focus is the most important one, and then you find which are the best ways of responding to that particular question. So the focus can be very much qualitative. It could be quantitative. You might decide to do survey data collection, or someone is very fond of numbers might want to work with large data sets which are already available on the field. Okay, or it could be a mixed method. It could be a mixture of doing a survey as well as doing interviews of some kind. Okay, so it lends itself to different methods. Okay, so what is distinctive about international research or conducting research in a different country context? And what I'm going to show you here is basically the next slide is a picture. So I was part of this big consortium called the Research Consortium on Educational Outcomes and Poverty. It was a consortium funded by the Department for International Development. It ran from 2005 to 2010. And it ran in countries Ghana, Kenya, India, and Pakistan. What we were trying to undo is to try to understand what impact does education have on the lives of young people living in poverty in these contexts. So very much an international research project. We had three partners in the UK. So we had Oxford, Cambridge, and Edinburgh as a university partnerships. And then we had four country partners. So what was really important in these four country contexts was to have the country partners have a shared understanding of research, of what we were trying to do. So we were running as part of the consortium. We were, had a series of workshops at the start of the research project to begin to understand how did our research partners understand research, and how did we understand research in relation to them. Okay, it's really important that we assume everyone has the same shared notion of research and of being a researcher, but it's not necessarily the case. That's a wrong assumption to make. You need to actually clarify these issues, especially in international research teams. So one of the tasks that we were trying to do with the group, we did together with the group of our southern partners, is begin to reflect on what does it mean to do research in a different context. Okay? So we all sat down with big sheets of gingerbread men, kind of figures, you know, and we had to populate them as to what does it mean to be a good researcher in an international context. And these are two visual representations, the photographs from what we finally came up with. I don't know if it's very clear at the back. So what were the big things that our research team was telling us? These were people who had experience of living in these contexts, working in these contexts, and researching in this context. So it was a very much an educative two-way process. So the huge things that came up from these discussions was sensitivity to the context. Being open, being sensitive, being respectful. That's hugely important when you're going into a different cultural context. How you represent yourself, notions of dressing up, okay? How do you interact with the community? How you represent yourself, that's a huge thing. There's a whole literature in international research around this notion of what is known as positionality. How do you position yourself in the research project determines the kind of data that you're likely to get. For instance, here's a small example. If someone assumes that you're coming, you're doing research and are funded by a huge charity organization or have some aid attached to you, right? Their response to you is going to be very different than thinking that you're an independent student researcher, right? Because they might respond to you in certain favorable ways which they think might elicit money, okay? So positionality is a huge issue, how people see you, who you are. Are you a student, a researcher, policy maker? What is it, okay? And that is through your physical appearance, your dressing up, whatever the case might be. And the other things which came up, indeed, it's about the ethics of research, and we'll be talking about that. The ethical, how do you conduct research which is ethical? Have you had a session on ethics? Mm-hmm. Excellent. So it takes up even more huge overtones when you're working in a different context. So what is the primary principle in ethics? What is the very primary principle in ethics? What did you learn from the whole session on ethics of research, just in one line? Do no harm. Excellent. Do no harm. That's it. That is, and doing no harm can be at so many different levels. And you have to be very careful about doing no harm at the individual level, doing no harm at the community level. And that's very intrinsically located in relation to who you are, how do you present yourself also. You know, you can offend people at a very psychological level, but also verbally offend people, right? So you've got to understand these notions and these subtleties of culture very carefully. And what's really interesting here is introspective and reflective, and I think that's really fundamental to a good international qualitative researcher. Being reflective, thinking through the data you're generating, through the encounters that you're having with people around you. I think that's really central. So another group was again talking about more or less exactly the same things, how you need to be accepted and how you present yourself, positionality. So they were trying to draw a sari here. This was in India, obviously. So they put a little bindi and a tikka and things like that just to show that it's really important to understand the cultural nuances in any given context in the presentation. Sensitivity, respect for culture, again, the whole notion of respect came up. So how do you become sensitive to a cultural context that you're yourself not part of? What do?
Research culture and what the sort of what would be deemed disrespectful things to do or say or how not to present yourself and stuff.
Absolutely. Research the culture, read up about it, read up fiction, non-fiction, whatever the case might be. Non-fiction can be hugely important too. Contextualize the place within the context that you're going to go. So you really need to begin to have a deeper appreciation of the cultural context before you decide to zoom in and start collecting data. And I think that sensitivity is hugely important, and that kind of a research is really essential. Okay. If one doesn't do that research, then there's danger of actually being unethical. You're representing voices incorrectly. But also the other central issue is trying to listen to the voices of people in terms of how they're representing themselves, being hugely important. I'm going to show you a photograph, and I want you to tell me what you see in that photograph. Anyone, go ahead.
It's a classroom.
It's a classroom. What's happening in the classroom?
It's classroom in Thai, populated by black students.
Mm-hmm.
They're wearing uniform.
Okay. Yeah. What else does anyone else see?
The whiteboard at the back. What's going on there?
Just a painted wall and lots of scribbling and paper being stuck, which has been removed, etc. So it's not a very white, well whitewashed kind of a wall. Yes, there are lots of markings, but that's not a whiteboard. Fair enough. What else are you seeing? Okay, so this image was part of a project which was looking at issues around teacher development in four African countries. I think this photograph was clicked in Zambia, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have it here. It was clicked in Zambia, and they showed it to other teachers in Kenya to ask what's happening. Okay, so that's one photograph. So you've structurally defined the photograph for me. There are children in it. They're all black children, and you know, there's something on the walls there. Okay. What do you see here?
Again, people in uniforms.
Okay. What's happening?
Digging a hole.
Yes.
Digging a hole in? Digging a hole.
Okay, digging a hole.
Digging one hole.
What else do you see?
There's also a building behind them. Not exactly.
Exactly. Okay. Anything else anyone wants to say? Something a little more than the description. Any feeling? Anything? What does it make you think about? What do you question?
There's like one adult in all those kids.
Good.
So the proportion.
The kids seem to be the ones working,
yeah.
And the adults looking.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Okay.
And there's not much supervision.
There's not much supervision. And there are huge health and safety concerns in
yeah.
this country. Look at that. I mean, look at that, absolutely. Okay, so what they did was a series of photographs were part of a teacher development workshop. So they showed these photographs at various places to get teachers discussing their classroom, their schools, etc. Your answers were very much descriptive, fair enough. You're not sitting in a teacher development context, so you're not running that kind of a workshop. But I'll just show you some of the responses that were elicited from the participants in these workshops. One of the participants looked at this picture and said, this is a picture of something good. This is a person who clicked the photograph. I wanted to show this is a good teacher, a teacher I like. So the person who clicked the photograph, this is what the person was capturing. Okay? When they showed this photograph to a group of teachers in a different context, this is what they said. This teacher has very poor classroom management skills. Look at what the boys are doing behind him. He has no control. A fair reading, right? But a very different reading. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The second one, the digging one, which would be a huge health and safety concern here. Child labor. Okay? This is of what the first response was, child labor, what these children were doing and why this photograph was clicked by this teacher is they were leveling the school environment, teachers and pupils working to prevent soil erosion. So that's what they were all engaging in. They were trying to protect their school environment, and it was not actually child labor. So there were other teachers around, they were all working together, but this is how it proceeds. So what am I trying to say here? What is the central message one's trying to communicate here? Or what is the central message that you pick up?
People have different perceptions of what something may seem.
Yeah.
Maybe not what it seems to one person or another.
Absolutely. We all interpret visual images, textual data, whatever, numbers differently based on the context we are part of. The lens we use is very much determined by our own cultural and life experiences. Absolutely. So A, acknowledging that. So when you start to, as if you're doing qualitative research, so one needs to acknowledge that once you've gathered your data and you're engaging in the data analysis, what you're going to be reading is not just what you're going to be reading. You're going to be reading based on your assumptions around the world, how you've been framed, what is your own cultural understanding. And that's not wrong. It's not a wrong reading of the data. It's just that you need to acknowledge that. And what does it mean? You know, we need to have the conversation that this is how I see it, but I don't know if my participants saw it that way. So that's first thing. And secondly, a good researcher would also try and have that conversation with the participants themselves. So if anyone's planning to use visual images for collecting data, participatory methods for collecting data, getting your participant to reflect with you on what that means would be extremely helpful. Okay? So I think that's hugely important to engage in that conversation. So the big issue that's being talked about here is cultural understanding and the sensitivity around cultural understanding. So the concept of culture must be foregrounded in what we study and also in the way we design, execute, write up, and disseminate our results. Well, you might not be coming too much in the dissemination, but at least in the tools that you use to gather your data, okay, in how you analyze your data and how you write up your data, this notion of cultural understanding, acknowledging that your cultural repertoire is significantly different if you're working in an international setting from those of your participants, is hugely central. Okay, rather than trying to see the world through your perspectives only, or even if you're going to do that, acknowledge that the parameter you're comparing with is what you are used to. That's fine to do, but a good researcher needs to be very clear of the bias. Have you heard this word bias since yesterday at any point? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Researcher bias? Absolutely. Hugely central. It's not wrong to have a research bias. Yes, you can reduce it, but it's important to acknowledge it. I think that's hugely central, acknowledging that it exists and it informs what we think and how we read our data. Okay, so I'm going to ask you another question. I'm a very uncomfortable person. This is a question. Think about it.
No,
I'm just
going to
wait for someone else. Sorry.
Yeah, I was checking. Thought you meant that you hadn't actually asked a question. I'm
just
going mad.
No, I have asked a question. Let me see if someone else will reply first. Come on.
I guess all of them have like very significant aspects of being need to focus on culture because, I don't know, improving dental hygiene and then LEDC might have completely different methods than an MEDC.
Okay, so my next question is how many of you agree with that? Show of hands.
Well, they're very important.
That your culture is important for all of them. Hey, Excellent, good to see that. Yes, it is important for all of them. Otherwise, we've taken a fantastic example of dental hygiene. So this is what we used in our regroup study. Try and explain something as simple like everyone should brush their teeth is part of dental hygiene. But there's so many interesting differences in how people brush their teeth, what they brush with. Again, what else constitutes in addition to brushing as oral hygiene and dental hygiene? It's so important. I think one of the most amazing things was with the difference we found in Africa and amongst the researchers when we were discussing notions of beauty and dental, dentistry and beauty and notions attached to that. So in South Asia, a gap in their front teeth in women is not seen as nice. Whereas in Africa, the bigger the gap, the prettier you consider it. So it was like, it was really interesting that how just subtle differences make a whole lot of difference. And these need to be appreciated. You know, spend thousands of rupees trying to bridge that gap in South Asia, you know, going to a dentist and getting your clippers done, et cetera. And many of the African countries, you might actually spend more money trying to increase the gap. You know, so interesting differences there. But each of these projects, that's the point, each of these projects, well, the first one, how can we improve teacher education? The very notion of teacher is so different. Okay, what is the role of the teacher? What's the status of the teacher, etc.? There's such different conceptual understandings of what we might see as a shared concept. And beginning to understand that, beginning to get beyond just what is seen as the obvious, is hugely important. Okay, so does this mean that one can't do international research if one has to get down into the basics so much and be very sensitive and has spent so much of time thinking and reading about one's own positioning? No, it's not. It does not mean that. So very much in terms of planning for your own project, if you're planning to work in an international context, what you need to spend time on is understanding the context. And this is what I was talking about earlier. Sensitivity to the context, understanding the context. So reading research is really important. So making an effort to read published research in the area that you're going to be researching, not just relying on foreign articles, okay, research papers, etc., but actually beginning to read research which is conducted by people living in these contexts, researchers living in these contexts, reading books, spending time reading newspaper articles before going. And everything's available so easily online nowadays. A lot of these things can be addressed. So very much read and understand and make yourself sensitive. So one is the literature review. Have you heard about the literature review? Review of the literature? Absolutely. So one is that. But then the other aspect is also trying to understand the context. So looking for country case studies in the context you're going to be studying or researching. Respect. Hugely central. And how do you develop that? With greater knowledge. Okay? And thirdly, reflexive and reflect. Okay, they're two very different things, but two centrally important. So you reflect and are reflexive of your own actions and the data you're generating, and what does it mean for your project. We've talked about that. Be aware of your positionality or positioning. Okay, and I'm sure someone else has said that previously to me, in either yesterday or today. As a qualitative researcher, you are the main instrument of research. Would you agree with that? Why is that the case? Why do we call the qualitative research as the main instrument of research? Go ahead.
Because you're the person who's designing the project and then entering the data and deciding how the data is manipulated and implementing the ideas. So like, since you're kind of the one running the show, so to speak,
yeah.
Your, a small bad decision on your part or a small like lack of planning or respect can really damage the project as a whole, and also, as Beth said, bring harm to the environment you're researching.
Absolutely. So that's really important. And also, you might have the very best of the interview schedules. Let's just take an example, okay? You might be deciding to conduct interviews with people like fellows, students in a different country context. And you might have a really, really good interview schedule, but if you don't deliver it correctly, if you don't form that rapport, if you don't form that relationship, if you don't ask the questions in a certain manner, or you prompt certain kind of answers, then the danger is that you're going to influence the outcomes of what the person is going to tell you. Isn't it? So you can have the best of the instruments available to you, but ultimately you are the one who's interviewing, who's engaging, giving those instruments to the person, and hence you have to be extremely careful what influence you are having as an individual on people's response to the questions you're asking them. Okay? Again, going back to the earlier point, it's not that you can always negate these issues. It's not that you can completely do away with such kind of interfering of the researcher's personality or the researcher's positionality. You can't do away with it, okay? Because ultimately you are the researcher, but you can be reflexive about them, okay? And that kind of a reflexivity should show in your writing when you're analyzing the data. So it's huge implications for beginning to think forward. Why did the person tell me that? Okay, why did this person tell me this, but not this person? He told me something else. Was it experiences were different, or did they see me differently? What was it? Okay, so these are important points to consider. So you as a researcher, so keeping a field diary, research diary, okay, during your data collection process is a really good idea. You know, for instance, if you're collecting data over a month's period, every day you're conducting interviews, or going into the community you're going to be working, just writing your final reflections, your day's reflections, any instances that had happened which might have influenced you in what you did or did not do, write them down. A researcher diary is a really wonderful way of making sure that you remember. And believe me, you do forget. Even the best of us would forget the other things which come up and the other exciting things which happen. And then things get really busy when you get back here. And when you're writing up your dissertation, having a research diary will be really powerful in helping you just step back a little and remember what it meant to be doing that fieldwork. Okay? Remember, it all doesn't happen really, really quickly. So you come back with your data and you have your classes going on and you have to analyze your data. So a research diary is a really interesting, reflexive tool to have, and I would encourage you very strongly to keep that. Okay, so I'm going to shift gears here to some extent. So what does it mean in terms of your planning for your research project? You need to state these. I think in international, it's fundamental to any research, but especially more so fundamental when you're researching a different cultural context, and especially if you don't have good knowledge of that context. You're going for the first time, you're going for a project. Think about the motivation. What is your motivation for doing it? What is your rationale for selecting your research topic? That's really important. Think about that, reflect on that, and then write that. Okay, that's really useful. So why is it that you're wanting to do what you're wanting to do? I think that's really interesting and powerful because, again, your selection will be determined by your own interests, right? But also what's easily available. Okay, I might want to research in South America, but I'm not going there in another few months' time. So no point. You know, can't do that. I want to talk to children in Zambia, but right, I'm not going there. So, or I'm going somewhere else, and hence I'm going to conduct my research project in that particular context. So it's the fact that it's easily available, it's a purpose of something, it fills up a certain purpose for me, that's fine. But just make sure that you're clear about your motivation, you're clear about your rationale, and reflect on that and state that. And also, be clear about the assumptions that you're making in your research. What are the assumptions? What do I mean by that? So it's interesting when you said earlier that you want to look at episodes of global significance. You know, and you talked about the Russian Revolution, and you talked about the Holocaust. Yeah? Now, they are of global significance, but one could argue they're of a certain part of the globe they're
yeah,
more significant.
Yeah, European and Western, which would be one of the things I'd be interested in, but you are assuming that enough places, because I obviously haven't really looked into it, I'm assuming that that is taught in a lot of different places as a history topic.
Yeah,
I know that, sure.
Exactly. So the assumption is they're of global significance, but they might not be, because other events
happen in other
places
that are historically more important to that area.
Exactly. And hence, so what you would be focusing on very much European events, which you would hope have a lot of more merit, and have had a huge impact in the history of Europe, right? And you want to see what it means. But then to assume that it's global, it's not necessary, even though it might be. But global and local and the northern and southern context can be hugely different, isn't it? So just unpicking those and making those clear when you're writing is hugely important. Okay, so what are the assumptions that are underpinning the research we're going to be doing? And again, it's really useful then for your own texture, your own writing of your dissertation, because you're positioning your research through your eyes, how you're approaching it. And that's really important as a researcher to be able to communicate that to a reader, because then they know how to read that body of research you produced. Otherwise, they have no idea why you're doing what you're doing and which of the lengths you're bringing into the field. Okay. Practicalities, which you need to do. Plan your research, hugely important. Plan. But also very important, centrally important, be ready to replan. Very important. Okay, things will go wrong, they always do, and that's fine, but you're ready to replan them. Okay, so have a backup. You were planning to interview all the teachers, but the teachers were on strike. What do? Have a backup. Talk to your supervisors. Be ready to replan. So that's the central message I'm trying to make here. Entering the field, think about what you're going to do, and this is again in an international research context, how you're going to go into the field of study, who you're going to make contact with, what is the role of the gatekeeper. So for instance, if you're going to study, work in a particular school, you need to understand who the people you need to take permission from. Head teachers, teachers, parents of children, children themselves, who are the people who you need to talk to, who you need to engage with, to have a better understanding of A, the ethics in that scenario. Okay, so you cannot just walk into a class and start talking to the children. You need to make sure you've taken etiquette permissions. And if that cultural context demands that you actually take permission from the parents, even for teenagers, then you do that. But you need to understand it, you need to ask the questions. Request for participation, again, being aware of the fact that different cultural settings demand that you conduct certain interviews. Like for instance, social hierarchies and power hierarchies can be extremely strong in certain contexts. So for instance, in India, I won't go into a school without having spent 5 or 10 minutes talking to the head teacher, explaining who am I, what am I doing, interviewing them a little, even though they might not be the primary source of data. But it's a fact of making them feel important, that they are important in terms of the knowledge they hold. Okay? What I might be really interested in children's voices, and that's fine. But acknowledging that the adult role here has hugely significant implications in that social context is really important. Anyone thinking about that? So what about yourself? So, are you assuming everyone in India speaks English?
Yeah.
Which is fair enough, in Delhi most of them would be.
No, that would be, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So how are you going to, and sometimes it so happens that you work in private schools and in high-end private schools and everyone does speak English there, then it's different. Okay, but especially if you're working in rural schools or in low-fee private schools or government schools, English competencies can be hugely different, depends on the age group you're working with, the social class, etc. So again, in which language do you conduct interviews? What is the role of the translator? How do you inculcate the translator to ask questions that you're asking? unless they're asking their own questions. They might be just discussing you. It has happened. Or might be prefacing every question with, oh my gosh, he wants me to ask that. I don't think it's a nice question, but never mind. Try and answer it. So we've had instances in our research, some of our research teams, etc., where if you don't actually have the translator on your side in terms of they understand what you're trying to do, it can be hugely problematic. Because they can start these side conversations with the participants and completely influence them. Okay? So try and have the translator on this side, not have. Have a conversation with them. Try and develop a strong rapport with them so that they believe in the value of the work you're trying to do. And it might be simply like, oh my God, this is really important for my dissertation. I really want to understand this really better. You've got to help me out. Okay? But that conversation is hugely important. Okay. Finally, and going back to in terms of the practicalities, the ethics. So you are required to fill in an ethical form at the faculty. You all know that, right? Excellent. So beyond that also, so that's the nod we have to ethics. You're thinking about things. But again, being ethical in the field is hugely important, as it demands you are respectful and you read and you plan and you don't waste people's time. The data you collect is the data you need, not a scattergun approach of trying to engage with everybody. Because hey, spending time talking to you is invaluable time for them. They could be getting on with 100 other things that they would like to get on with. Okay, so be respectful of people's time and the demands you're making on that time. They're not going to get anything out of it. You're going to get a dissertation out of this. Okay, so you don't need to think about the ethics around that. Okay, and also I think what's really important, so those are the practicality issues, but also acknowledging and understanding that there's a whole field of research, body of literature out there, which is beginning to really be very critical, rightly so, of this notion of research tourism. I'm going to this country for a holiday, let me go and conduct my research there. I'm just going to drop in, collect data extract, go back and write it up. Thinking through the ethics around doing international research, beginning to place your own understanding of international education research. There's some really fantastic books I've put in here. So this is Perel's Platforms and Reflexivity. It's done, it's an edited book by editors based in Pakistan. This is Michael Crossley and Keith Watson. I've got the references at the end of it. It's Comparative and International Research in Education. Again, these are edited books which provide a really interesting, nuanced appreciation of what it means to do educational research in an international context. If you are serious about this, have a look, pick up one of them. This is a fantastic book, big plug for this, Anna Robinson Bunk, Cross-Cultural Perspectives in Education Research, and it's a fantastically easy read. Because what it does is actually, Anna engages with her own PhD students who are international students. She works at the University of East Anglia, and they reflect on how they have been taught certain things in the methodology or methods sessions in their Western universities, and in what it meant in terms of using them in a completely different cultural context. So just to give you an example, individual semi-structured interviews. I'm sure you've all been told how wonderful they are, how useful they can be, and they can be very useful. But imagine a scenario. So this is me working at Riku. One of our researchers wanted to conduct interviews with young people. Okay? She wants to understand issues around youth and gendered experiences of being young in these different poverty contexts. So she had a very neat plan of having a very good semi-structured interview. She would spend hours and hours and hours developing. We went into the field. And guess what happened? There was no notion of an individual interview. Why? Because in many of these contexts, people living in poverty do not have big houses where you can extract an individual, go sit quietly somewhere, and have a chat with them. The geographical spaces are very limited, okay? And what we were expecting, all these lovely, intimate one-to-one interviews were not happening because the family was there, the mom was there, the dad was there, sometimes the neighbor was there, okay? An and everyone had a say in the interview questions being asked. So they, you would be having a conversation, and suddenly the mom would go, no, she doesn't do that. That's not right. No, she doesn't feel that. That's not right. And suddenly you were like, this individual interview became a collective enterprise and the construction of the individual. Okay? And these were not just noises. These were important voices. And then the challenge was, oh boy, how am I going to analyze this text? Right? So we sat down and we thought about it and we came up with different analytical frameworks. But you see what I'm trying to get across here is you have to appreciate the context you're working in. And the best laid methods need to be culturally and contextualized. Geographically, culturally, they need to be contextualized in terms of what can be done with them. So that's really important, and that's what these books do. They provide you some really interesting insights. And I do acknowledge that you'll not be spending hours and hours agonizing about this. But if you want to seriously do research in a different context, I think just locating it in the broader field of emerging knowledge would be useful. Okay, so there's a huge criticism about Eurocentric perspectives in education research, especially in international education research, and there's a lack of culturally appropriate research frameworks. There's some really, again, interesting books around critical and indigenous methodologies, and again, I do appreciate that you're not going to be reading all this literature, but the reason I have it there is just in case one of you gets really excited about it and you want to go ahead and read a little more and delve a little more in terms of framing your own research project. Okay, so I think this is really important. There's a fantastic book by someone called Linda Tohava-Smith, and she said research should not become another of the notions of they came, they saw, they named, and they claimed. Yeah, it should not be another way of academic imperialism or colonizing of a different kind. So she draws heavily on the post-colonial critiques to talk about how research should be empowering and not colonizing of the individuals that it claims to research with. So there's a huge discourse around challenges, this sort of a educational research, which has primarily been determined through very much northern frameworks, Western frameworks, of what it means to be researching in a different context. Okay? So there's a huge field of study and knowledge out there, and Linda Tohava-Smith is another book, and I think in the next slide, I have an extract from the book. So she is here reflecting on what research to her means from her experiences. Yeah, so what is Linda Tohava-Smith communicating here?
The Eurocentric attitude towards research has, to some extent, made research itself a loaded word. So that mm-hmm. means that the practice of research in indigenous areas or wherever has to be handled with yet more care and respect because of A, the history of it, and B, the associations that now come with it. Because I guess anyone doing research from a colonial perspective, that's immediately becomes loaded if you're going into a less economically developed or a different culture or whatever.
Absolutely. So she provides a really powerful critique here in this whole book. It's worth reading. And it really does make you realize and appreciate how disempowering research can be if badly done. Okay, and I think that's a huge ethical issue around research also, that how disempowering it can be, how disabling it can be for people and their voices. So it's a whole notion of representation, because ultimately, when you're going to research something, you're going to represent someone. And if you don't represent themselves sensitively, okay, and honestly and respectfully, there's a huge danger that you're actually doing more harm than good. Okay? And again, the book is titled Decolonizing Methodologies, and I think it's important to acknowledge that all this literature has come out in the last few years, literally in the last 5 to 7 years or so, there's been a huge growth of Southern writers writing about research and what it means to be researching in different cultural contexts, or what it means to be researched. And that's the powerful thing about it. You know, it's turning the lens around and saying, from a research perspective, what does it mean? What is coming across? And how our representations need to be challenged. I think that's a really powerful thing in the discourse currently. So I think Tillman does a really good job by saying, by valuing and privileging the voices of the researched, these approaches resist, these approaches, these discourses of post-colonialism, etc., they have helped resist theoretical dominance and seek to create theory and practice to solve problems and honor worldviews and ways of being of culturally diverse people. So I think what's really important as a takeaway message is that how do you privilege the voices of the research? So how do you make sure that when you are collecting data in a different country context, making sure that you're really giving the opportunity to the people to reflect on the kind of data you've collected? Okay, what is the partnership you have there? What is their role in helping you analyze the data, make sense of what you've collected? I think, and that's the strongest thing, hearing the voice of the people and acknowledging that how you're going to listen to them is very much going to be determined by your cultural frame, and that is fine till the time one can acknowledge that in one's writing and analysis.